On this week's Adam Schefter podcast, we're joined by the single biggest storyline from last weekend's NFL Combine, UCF linebacker Shaquem Griffin, who had his left hand amputated at the age of 4 after he was born with amniotic band syndrome, which means an amniotic membrane wrapped around his hand in the womb. And Shaquem Griffin will tell us the story of how he lost his left hand. Plus, we'll hear from the free agent-to-be wide receiver Allen Robinson, who the Jacksonville Jaguars did not decide to put a tag on, and now will be a free agent when the league year opens next week on March 14th. But first, Shaquem Griffin. Shaquem.
Hey, how you doing?
Congratulations on the combine.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Listen, I think that when we look at all the storylines from this weekend, and there were many, there was no bigger storyline than you. There are not many people who are on the Today Show on Monday morning with the results of their combine, you know, 4.38 40-yard dash, 20 bench press reps, 117-inch broad jump. Were you pleased with the way the whole thing went, Shaquem?
Yeah, I was pleased. But after I ran out, the first 40, obviously, I was excited about that. The second 40, I started cramping up pretty bad, and I did my drills, you know, cramping really bad throughout the entire time I was doing drills. So, you know, I feel like I did good to make it through, but it wasn't up to my expectations. So I'm kind of excited to get back healthy, to get back right again, and, you know, have my brother train me for the DB drills and to get my 100% at Pro Day. I think it's a lot I can actually show still.
So, Shaquem, a lot of people wonder, because the first 40-yard dash was a 4.38. The second, you were clocked in at, I think, a 4.58, and people didn't understand the discrepancy in the two times. So when did the cramp start happening, and what was the situation there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just more of just dehydration. I know we're speaking to some of the coaches, and the way that the stadium is set up in there, you can get dehydrated pretty fast. And, you know, I guess I should have took more, you know, had more water intake before I started running more. You know, the first one was good, and, you know, I felt good. And as I kept warming up and stuff, not knowing that I was going to get dehydrated that fast, soon I took off my second one. And by third step, I started cramping up. And, you know, if anybody who runs or anybody who knows anything about running, you know, you got to have that toe pointed up to the ceiling for you to get a good run. And once I started cramping up in my calf muscles, my foot immediately dropped. And, you know, I know my brother's like, you should just stop running, but, you know, I was already starting, so it was too late for me just to stop running.
How much consideration did you give to stop running there and not running a second time because of the cramps?
I thought about it, but me just being able to run past 10 yards already, I just felt like it was too late. And he said it could have been worse, but, you know what, I ran it. I came out healthy still. I didn't pull anything, so, you know, I'm fine with it. Obviously, they're gonna take the best time, and, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody wants to know why it was a big difference. But, you know, being in that state, you can get dehydrated really fast, and, you know, that was kind of what happened.
So, Shaquem, when you run the 40 in the UCF Pro Day, what are you expecting to run at that time?
I mean, I'm hoping I don't got to run the 40 ever again, to be honest. I think I'm pretty good with a 4.3 40. My plan on Pro Day is to, you know, do the 3 cone drills or do the vertical and do the DB drills. I think I'd be good to go.
What, in a weekend that was full of big moments for you, what was the most memorable part of this combine experience? Because I'm sure you'll be thinking about certain things that stand out. What stood out to you that you'll always remember?
I mean, one thing that stood out to me was the interviews. You know, being asked questions about the impact that I was making. I think that was kind of amazing that, you know, the news feed I was getting about the things I was doing, because obviously going through the combine, you're moving around so much, you're doing so much that you don't get a chance to sit back and see what's been said or what's been talked about, or, you know, who is outside looking in. Obviously, there's so much people looking in, outside looking in, but, you know, when I was able to sit, grab my phone and look at it, I started to see how many people I was impacting, and I was like, that was amazing. I mean, before the 40, before everything else, he said, that was the best part for me, even after I ran. I wasn't worried about nothing else, but I was excited that see so many people that was outside looking in and seeing what I was doing, and it was making their day, making them happy. Like, I'm a people's person, so whatever I'm doing, if I'm making somebody's day, I mean, I'm enjoying it no matter what.
How did you know that you were making an impact over the combine?
Oh, trust me. I mean, when I got on Twitter and seeing how people were reacting and how many mentions I had, I mean, literally, I think the time that I have on Twitter, I mean, literally, like, it was going crazy. Like, every time I tried to read something else popped up. And it kept going just like that. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Obviously, this never happened to me before, so it was exciting to see how many people was outside just enjoying what I was doing. I was like, man, I'm ready to go back out there and, you know, do the bench press again or run the 40. I mean, just to see how people reacted, I was excited to do more for them. Because obviously, before I even got invited to the combine, you know, I had so many people. I had the entire country behind me, you know, supporting me. They was on Twitter saying, why is he not invited? How can we get him invited? At NFL, get this man invited. They were supporting me before I even got there. So I was excited to do more for them, to show them that my appreciation, because I told them in my video, I wouldn't be there without them, because they supported me throughout the entire process. They're behind me 100%. And, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, to show them that they invited the right person. And I think I accomplished that.
Well, it's interesting, because I think a lot of people don't even realize that. You initially were not invited to the combine. You went to the Senior Bowl. You played very well at the Senior Bowl. How did it come to be that you finally were invited to the combine as a late ed?
For the most part, I knew it's gonna be questions all over the place. I knew that, you know, people are gonna have their own opinion, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And for me, not being invited the first time, you know, it had me to have a chip on my shoulder, because I know what I was doing. You know, I'm far from done, and it's only the beginning. So I was just went to the Senior Bowl. I was able to, you know, make a name for myself there, to be able to put me in a spot where I can get a better chance to be invited. And once I did that, I knew once I got invited, I knew that was my opportunity to be able to show everybody what I actually can do. And one thing I always ask for is opportunity. If I get opportunity, I mean, the sky's the limit.
Now, last year, your twin brother, Shaquille Griffin, was drafted 90th overall in the third round by the Seattle Seahawks. And last year, he played 15 games, 838 snaps, had 14 pass breakups, 58 tackles, had a really strong year. Is there any sort of friendly competition, Shaquille, between you and your brother about who will wind up being drafted higher?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, everything we do, I say it all the time, everything we do is going to be a competition. From who can run the fastest, obviously be tired, who can do better drills, who can do anything better, who can eat the most. It's always a competition. So, trust me, this is only the beginning. We're not stopping here. I mean, literally, we're literally just getting started. So, see who can get drafted the highest, who can have the better first season. I'm talking about literally each and every year, I'm trying to top them. I mean, I can definitely say throughout college, you know, UCLA being national champions, I can really say that I had a better senior season than him.
He knows that too, right?
Oh, yeah, he knows it. I mean, he found out on social media. I mean, in interviews, I'm telling everybody, like, yeah, my senior season was better than my brother's. And trust me, he read about it when he was in Seattle.
So now that the combine is over, how high would you expect to go in this draft, Shaquille? Any idea?
I mean, I literally have no idea. I mean, I talked to my agent about did I do enough for me to be able to have my draft stock go up, and he said, yeah, but I never asked about what round. I never asked about what pick. I mean, literally, all I asked for is the opportunity for me to get there and just be on the team, because once I get on the team, then that's going to be me being able to show everybody what I actually can do on the next level. And I'm pretty sure that I'm going to do just fine, because, you know, there's going to be so many doubters saying what I can't do, and the only thing I'm going to do is showing what I can.
When we talk about going to the next level, Shaquille, what would you say you would bring to the team that drafts you?
I mean, the thing for me is I'm going to be a person who can not only be helpful to the team and, you know, win games, but I'd be a guy who can change the culture of things. And, you know, you've been playing football for so long, guys have been playing football for so long that they get beside themselves when it comes to the reason why they play, or the reason why they started, or the reason why they have so much fun doing it. And I can be that person where when you look at me, I give you a reason on why you're playing football, the reason why it's good to change the culture of the team, because, you know what, I know what it takes to create a good culture. I know what it takes to have good team chemistry, and I want to be able to show everybody the reason why we chose to play football, because it's fun, we love it, we got passion for it. And I want to be able to bring that back to any team, change the locker room, change the way we on the field, change the way how we feel about, you know, playing each and every game. And I want to be that guy who can be able to bring that to each and every team that gave me the opportunity to be there.
Now, Shaquille, for those who don't know, you had your left hand amputated at the age of 4. You were born with amniotic band syndrome. What do you remember about losing your left hand?
I mean, what I remember is, you know, when a lot of people think about when they were 4 years old, obviously, it's hard to remember certain things, but I was able to remember the pain I was going through. I remember when I was, you know, trying to sleep, I rolled over and I put my hand on the wall and I got up, went to the kitchen. I mean, I climbed up on the counter trying to get a knife out of the drawer, trying to, you know, remove my own fingers, and my mom caught me. And then I after that, she took me to the hospital the next day to get it removed. I remember being in the hospital dragging my red wagon. You know, I remember my mom picking me up and laying me down, and they put the mask on me and woke up with bandages. I mean, I remember stuff like that. Like it's like clear as day, and it's kind of crazy being that young and being able to remember so much of it.
But it was that vivid to you. You actually tried to self amputate your own left hand before they did it at the hospital.
Yeah, I was trying to be my own doctor.
Wow. And how do you think that changed your perspective on life?
I mean, for me, I was just happy to be able to remove my finger because it felt so much better me playing ball or catching ball. I didn't feel pain no more. I mean, it changed a lot. It really changed a lot. Because when you can't do something because the pain of it or it's too hard or, you know, being able to overcome that and get back to doing things that you love, I mean, it's no better feeling than that.
Chakeem, does a day ever go by where you're not reminded that the left hand isn't there?
Oh, trust me, I never even think about it.
Never even think
sometimes I forget.
Incredible. And how excited are you to get to the NFL?
I mean, I'm really excited. I'm ready to, you know, prove a lot of people wrong. I'm ready to know that I'll do my brother. I mean, that's all you want to do is, you know, have friendly competition with your family, show everybody what you can do, enjoy while you're doing it, and have fun and love it.
Shaquem, congratulations on a fantastic combine. You were the big storyline of the weekend, and good luck beating your brother Shaquille and going ahead of the 90th spot in the draft. That's the spot we'll all be watching.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me today.
Alan.
Adam, how's it going?
What is it like to be Allen Robinson these days, a week or so out of free agency, where your life is unsettled, you have no idea where you'll be spending your future, and so much is at stake?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, I try to keep myself in what I would call like an eye of the storm. You know, I know it's a lot going on, you know, but again, for me, I just try to keep everything as simple for me as possible. You know, letting my agent handle most of the work, you know, I mean, me and him talk a lot, you know, I mean, especially this time of year, you have to be on the same page with him, you know. So my main focus right now is, again, I'm still doing my rehab stuff, getting better each and every day, you know. So that's my main focus, you know. And I know for my agent, you know, it's a big part on him as far as just him handling and weathering, you know, everything that's going on, you know. So I try to leave as much of the hard work to him as possible.
You brought up your rehab. How is that going? And please update us where you're at in that process.
Man, it's going really good, you know. So so for me now, being able to get back to doing some on the field stuff when it comes to sprinting, you know, jumping plyos, doing things like that, you know, really getting back into some football movements has been exciting. You know, when you're out of, you know, your football element, you know, for a few months, you know, that can kind of be a little bit tiresome mentally, you know, just being able just getting ready, you know, to get back to my old self, you know. So it's been fun.
Now, you tore your ACL on the third play of the season last year, which is really pretty amazing. You made a 17-yard catch on the play you were hurt, which was your only catch of the season. What was it like to go through a season that you had prepared for and then not really get to participate in other than those three plays?
That's one of the toughest things I've ever had to go through. You know, for me, it was one of those things where, you know, I put a lot of work into the offseason last year. You know, I spent some time out in Charlotte training with Randy Moss, you know. So just the amount of work and stuff that, you know, that I put in down there with him, you know, and him really getting me ready for the season. You know, it's one of those situations where I had never been ready for a season, in my opinion, this much as I was this year. So, you know, suffering that injury in the third play of the game, you know, was tough. It was really tough on me, actually, you know. But once that did happen, you know, I knew at that point, you know, it was going to be a lot going on as far as my future, you know, and it being some kind of just uncertainty of where I will want to be, you know. So I kind of prepared myself for that, you know, just really keeping my mind mainly focused on getting back, you know, getting to be the player that I am, you know. So for me, I know I'm on my way to that, you know, and I know I'll be back there soon.
When you say soon, what is the timeline? Are you expected to be able to be ready for training camp? Are you expected to be ready for the start of the season, Alan? What have doctors told you about your prognosis for the upcoming season?
Yeah, I know I'll be fully clear well before camp, you know. So I know I'll be ready to go for camp, you know, without any limitations or anything like that, you know. So I do know that. So right now it's just kind of just for me being in Jacksonville, doing most of my rehab there, you know, just kind of talking to them early on. They were a little bit they just wanted to take some time with my rehab because we had the time and I had the time, you know, to be able to do that, you know. So right now, you know, I'm starting to pick things up a lot, you know, and it's been fun doing that, you know. So I'll be back again doing some like football specific things here pretty shortly. So it's been a good process.
So the team that signs Allen Robinson will be getting a receiver who will be healthy for training camp, who is, by the way, 24 years old, which is hard for me to imagine that you're still 24 and entering into the prime of your career. But what else could you tell teams, Alan, that they will be getting if they go and sign you?
For me, it's one of those things where, you know, if you talk to anybody who has ever coached me, you know, from the time I set foot on a little league field to my college coach or my high school coach, you know, to a guy who even coached in this league who's coached me before in Bill O'Brien. You know, if you ask any of those guys, one thing that they will say for me as a player is that they have a respect for me as a player because they know what they're going to get out of me each and every day. I'm a player who comes in to work, who come in to get the job done, you know, and that's something that I've really prided myself on, you know. So that's one thing that I know that my MO is, and, you know, any coach who has ever coached me or talked to a coach who has ever coached me knows a little bit about me and knows a little bit about my background as a player, you know. So I think that goes a long way, and I think that will continue to go a long way for me.
You know, you brought up Randy Moss, Alan, and I don't know whether you realize this, but you are one of 13 players in NFL history to gain 1,400 receiving yards and 14 receiving touchdowns in a single season. I'm going to read you the list of the other players. Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Marvin Harrison, Lance Allworth, Antonio Freeman, Elroy Hirsch, who's in the Hall of Fame, Calvin Johnson, Brandon Marshall, Herman Moore, Mohsin Mohammed, Terrell Owens, Demaryius Thomas, and you. That's quite an extensive list. What does that say to you that you're one of only 13 players in history to gain 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns in a single season? And by the way, you're just turning 24 here.
You know, it says a lot. And I think it says a lot to the standpoint that whereas I know in that 2016 season, I may not have had the season that I wanted to have, you know. But, again, I think what really helps me sleep at night about that year is that I know for me that those plays and things like that were out there to be made, you know, and I created some very good opportunities for myself that just may not have been capitalized, you know, in a couple moments in that year, you know. But again, when you turn on the tape in 2016 and see how much better I actually got from the 2015 season, you know, I think anybody can notice that, you know. So for me, I think it says a lot, and that also means a lot to me, you know, being a guy who's 24 in this league, you know, and knowing that I really haven't even peaked. Reached the peak of my career yet, you know. I think really, again, is one of those things where I know the level of play that I can get to, you know, and I know that my best ball is really still in front of me.
Alan, you're born in Detroit. How does somebody from Detroit get away from my school, Michigan, and get to Penn State?
Coming out of high school, it's funny that a lot of schools wanted me to play corner. So for me, Penn State was one of those schools that I would be able to go there and play receiver. So, Rich Rod was at Michigan. He really wasn't recruiting me to play receiver. Michigan State had offered me to play cornerback, you know. So, for me, I really wanted to play receiver, and Penn State was one of those schools that was going to give me the opportunity.
And so you went there. Did you get the chance at all to know Saquon Barkley at all, or he came right after you?
Unfortunately, I didn't. He came right after me, you know. But being able to watch that kid play, man, has been such a unique thing. It's funny because me and some of my teammates who I played with at Penn State were just having the debate the past weekend after the combine, saying who had a better college career, Saquon Barkley or Reggie Bush, you know. So I think whenever you can get into comparisons like that with players, you know, I think that just kind of says a lot about him as a player, you know. And I think he speaks for himself when, you know, when you can kind of look at him and know him personally without even actually knowing him, knowing the kind of person he is.
Having watched him at Penn State, as I'm sure you got the chance to do, especially this past year, what kind of mark do you expect him to make in the NFL this upcoming season?
I expect him to make a tremendous mark in the NFL. You know, he's one of those players who has such a unique skill set. When I mean unique, I mean being able to do everything well on the football field. You know, you don't get too many players that are just ready to come in right then and play. You know, from receiving out the backfield to running. You know, I know he's a really knowledgeable guy when it comes to the game. So I don't foresee you know, protections being a problem for him or anything like that. So whenever you can get one of those guys like that are almost a shoe-in for coming in and playing right away, you know, I think the sky's the limit for him.
Hey, Alan, I really want to thank you for taking the time today. I really do appreciate it. Lots of luck in free agency, and we will chat soon.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Adam, it's a great time of year. Coming out of the combine, free agency just around the corner, and plenty of people have plenty of questions. Let's get it started. What do you say?
You got it, Josh. Thanks for the questions.
Hey, Adam. My name is Andrew over here in Dallas, Texas. Quick question for you. With Byron Jones moving back to cornerback, do you think there's a better chance they go grab Earl Thomas to live by that secondary?
Well, Andrew, listen, I think Seattle would be open to dealing Earl Thomas. The problem is, in my mind, I think it's probably going to take something like a second-round draft pick to get him. And as big of an addition as Earl Thomas would be for the Dallas Cowboys, and as much as I'm sure he'd like to be back there, I just don't know if the Cowboys are going to be willing to give up a second-round pick to a guy who already makes a lot of money at a time when they're trying to shed payroll to make room for DeMarcus Lawrence and Zach Martin. We could play all these names. People like to do that. But the fact of the matter is they all have to fit within the confines of the salary structure. And so while everybody would love to see Earl Thomas in Dallas outside of the fans in Seattle and the 12th man, I just don't know how practical it actually is. But it's certainly something we'll be tracking, Andrew. We'll see if it does happen. My guess is no, but it would be great and exciting if it did.
Let's stick in the state of Texas for this next voicemail.
My name is Mark from Michigan. My question is about the draft. Lamar Jackson, what do you think about the Houston Texans drafting Lamar and having him back up Watson? It seems to me that when Watson got hurt last year, Houston sort of got out of sync with their offense because they could no longer run the plays Watson was running. And I think if they had Jackson, he could run the same or very similar plays to Watson, get out of the pocket, run, use his feet. On the move runs, you know, throws, things like that. And, you know, between the two of them, one of them should always be healthy, hopefully.
Well, Mark, what I would say to that is, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Lamar Jackson winding up in Houston. The problem there is that the Texans are short of draft pick capital. And they're on a team that has a lot of needs. They could use offensive line. They could use a tight end. They could use some defensive backs. They could use another wide receiver. There are a lot of needs there in Houston, and there aren't a lot of picks. So now, with your first pick, and I think it's going to take a high pick to go get Lamar Jackson, are you going to go and take a quarterback with your top pick when you've got so many other glaring holes at other positions? I just don't see it happening. What you're saying does make sense, and it would be awesome to have a guy like Lamar Jackson backing up Deshaun Watson and serving as an insurance policy. Again, I just don't think that that's a direction the Texans are going to go in. I think their needs are too great elsewhere, Mark.
Another interesting draft question.
Joe Hernandez from Texas. And my question was, do you think teams should draft according to how their division is? Like, you know, the NFC South, you know, do you draft players to stop Cam Newton? And do you draft players to stop, you know, New Orleans running backs?
Well, Joe, I would tell you this, that goes on all the time. Whenever there's a team in a division with a dominant unit, a dominant position, oftentimes you'll see people actually go out and draft to slow down the division rival. Now, in the NFC South, I think that, yeah, you want people who are going to be big enough and fast enough to bring down Cam, to slow the Saints' running game, whatever it may be. But I don't know if there's anybody in there that merits basically defining your draft around certain people. I think the teams in that division still have to go get the best players, solve their needs, do that sort of thing. In a perfect world, yeah, you get some defensive linemen or linebackers to help slow down New Orleans' run game. You're aware of it when you're drafting, but you're combining that thinking with your own needs and your own weaknesses to see if you could solve some of those issues. It's an interesting question. I don't know that it's entirely applicable here, Joe, but it's a valid thought.
Hey, Adam, it's Gino here from Austin, Texas. I was calling to ask you, in regards to the Patriots, with Brady having maybe a year or two left from what it's looking like, do you see them being more active and more aggressive this coming free agency?
Well, Gino, I couldn't hear his first name, Josh. He was one of those two.
He was from Texas, just like everybody else who's called so far.
Yeah, we got a lot of voicemails from Texas.
We're big in the Lone Star State.
Yeah, the podcast is big there. Whether it was Gene or Gino, I could tell you this. Here's the answer to that question. I think the Patriots are definitely going to be out to find a quarterback in this draft. Now, we don't know that that means picking one in round one or round two or round three. It just depends, as always, where value intersects with need. And maybe Lamar Jackson sitting there in round one, and maybe the Patriots have a huge grade on Lamar Jackson, and maybe that's the way that they go. But that also would be contingent upon who else is there. Maybe there's a prospect that slides to the Patriots spot at 31, and you're looking at that pick, and you say, hey, we'd like to get him. But the thing here is that they've got the 49ers second round pick in addition to their own. And I think when you go and trade Garoppolo in a perfect world, maybe one of these guys like a Luke Falk or a Kyle Lauletta or a Mason Rudolph or whoever it is that the Patriots have a high grade on slides to their spot. Because I can tell you this, they are definitely looking to find a quarterback in this draft. But the question is, how high do they take one and where is that value in April?
But while they have their current quarterback, and pardon me if I misinterpreted the question, while they have Brady, do you think they're going to use this offseason to go quote-unquote all in to try and make one more championship run before it's all over for Brady?
I think they do that every year. I mean, this is not any different than last year or the year before. And even with Brady being towards the end of his career, nobody knows how much longer he's going to play, whether this would be his last year, whether he plays two or three more years. We don't know that. But I don't think it changes New England's approach. The Patriots aren't saying, boy, this might be the last chance we get with Tom. They're just thinking, hey, we got a good team. We're going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year. Let's give ourselves the best chance to go do that.
So four straight questions either from the state of Texas or about teams in the state of Texas. Let's close it up by going across the pond.
Hi, it's Sullivan from England. My question is, where do you think Kirk Cousins will end up?
Josh, did he say Ed Sullivan?
I believe he did. Yes,
from
we
England?
Have found Ed Sullivan. Not Ed Sullivan, the famous TV host, but Ed Sullivan, who wants to know about Kirk Cousins.
Hi, it's Sullivan.
Ed Sullivan.
Or does he say Ed Sullivan? But whatever, we're going to make him Ed Sullivan for this podcast, because I think it's fascinating that we've got an Ed Sullivan calling in, and we've got an Ed Sullivan question on Kirk Cousins, no less.
Yes.
So I think here's the deal on Kirk Cousins. I think the New York Jets are going to be the most financially aggressive team for his services. The most desperate, the strongest pitch, the team that goes hardest at him. I think the Vikings offer the best plug-and-win scenario right now. So the question becomes, if you're Kirk Cousins, what is it that you desire? Do you desire to make an additional $25 million or so over the course of that contract from the New York Jets? Or do you want to go in a Super Bowl with Minnesota? The one thing I could say about this, I think he's going to be on a short-term deal, possibly a three-year contract. We don't know where the number is going to come in from any of them, other than the Jets, I think, are going to be the strongest offer. I think the Broncos will be in play. The Vikings will be in play. The Cardinals are monitoring the situation. There will not be another team, a la Buffalo or Cleveland, that sneaks in to sign away Kirk Cousins. It'll be of those four. And if I had to rank the four today, going in, I think I'd rank it Minnesota, New York, Denver, Arizona. Now, again, we see Final Four teams ranked all the time, and it doesn't really mean anything. That's just my sense. I think, knowing Kirk Cousins the way I do, I think he's going to want to win. And I think the best chance to win is in Minnesota. But then the question becomes is the money disparity, which no one knows right now, including Kirk Cousins, going to be so great that he can't pass up the extra money from New York or Denver? Then you go and do that. But this is why it's a very difficult proposition to predict right now. It's why I believe it comes down to those four and maybe those three teams, because I don't know that Arizona is going to be able to make it happen. And then it's going to be up to Kirk Cousins to measure the intangibles, what certain things are worth, and make his decision. Again, if I had to bet a dollar today, I would bet on the Vikings. I will not be shocked if it's the Jets. I don't think the Broncos are out of this by any means. And these things change day to day.
Whoa, Adam, relax. Betting a whole dollar on this?
Josh.
Well, yeah.
I've got to save up for all the other dollar bets I'm going to make during free agency.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad we got Ed Sullivan.
Yes.
From over in England. But just so everyone knows, that was by far the most popular question going through the voice mailbox. Probably 65% of the calls were about Kirk Cousins. Ed Sullivan, or if it's just Sullivan, our English friend just got selected because how can you say no to that accent? But either way, keep the calls coming for next week's show or anytime. 860-506-5779.
And so there's another edition of the Adam Schefter podcast. Very special thanks to UCF linebacker, defensive back Shaquem Griffin. Special thanks to free agent to be wide receiver Allen Robinson. And thank you to you, the listeners, for submitting voicemail questions on a week-to-week basis, supporting this podcast, giving us your time. We truly appreciate it. Thank you very much, and we'll see you back here for the Adam Schefter podcast next week.